James Bond's all-time high. We are the Spy-Fi guys, and this is Octopussy.
Welcome to the Spy-Fi guys.
So I apologize to the universe for that.
Yeah. Wow.
Justice for Denison.
Is it though?
I laughed and then I hated myself for laughing. Hello and welcome back to the Spy-Fi Guys, where we cover spy facts, spy fiction, and everything in between. I'm Zach.
And I'm Christian.
And we are at the beginning of a little bit of a James Bond arc.
Yeah.
Christian, the reason why I picked this movie is for a couple of reasons.
Okay,
and let's one of them is I feel like this is the least talked about James Bond movie.
I mean,
what do you think? As the resident James Bond super fan, as opposed to a mere James Bond regular fan like myself, I feel pretty comfortable making that claim.
I never hear it appear in anyone's top lists. I'm sure there are people who out there who, you know, this is their favorite James Bond film, but it's not a common one. And so because of that, I think it's just not talked about as much, other than for some of the not great portrayals of India.
Well, I feel like it's obviously not good because you just said it doesn't appear in anybody's top list. But I also think it doesn't appear in anybody's bottom lists either. Maybe. Possibly.
Maybe. We'll see. I don't know. Sometimes it does appear in those.
Yes, but the movie we're talking about today, of course, is Octopussy, and I'm going to go for the record of how many times I can say pussy in a single episode. They say it in the movie and nobody even reacts, which I find
it'll probably be up there, and we can do a transcript word search with our coverage of Goldfinger and how many times we said pussy galore.
Not many times, I'm telling you that. But this time I'm leaning into it.
All right, I mean, we kind of have to, because it's the main Bond girl's name.
Exactly, and the name of the movie.
Yep. Yeah.
So, like I said, it's rarely talked about, and I'm going to have more thoughts about that later on as we get into the movie, about the only thing I did know about this.
All right. Other than the name.
Well, so the second reason why I picked it is because I had literally no memory of it. So I thought, have I not seen it before? Because, as we've discussed many times here on the Spy-Fi Guys, my Bond education came from renting the VHSs from Blockbuster. Mm-hmm. And then the 007 Days of Christmas.
Right.
So it's totally possible I could have missed one somewhere in there. And I think that was the case this time.
Interesting. Yeah. It's one I've seen maybe only once or twice. It's not one I come back to very often. And we'll get into one of my favorite things right in the start of this movie. But I think that covers our history with the movie. So shall we get into our plot synopses?
Well, actually, before we do.
Oh. Yeah, we got what
else?
I'm going
to say the third reason why I picked the movie
is,
for those of you who don't pay close attention to the episodes, I recently got married. My wife is Indian, first generation. She was born in Telangana. And I've been to India only once and only very briefly, so I'm far from an expert on it. But when I heard that there's a James Bond movie that takes place there, I was like, I just got to see it.
Oh, yeah. Yep. With that being said, let's get into our plot synopses.
Plot synopsis.
Okay, so as always, we have our poetry plot synopses. I will do a haiku and a limerick. And as always, the spoilers for this movie from 1983 begin right now. So if you're going to watch the movie and you don't want to be spoiled, here we go. So first is our haiku for Octopussy. Kamal wants the egg. Come and hang out with me, James. Suddenly, a nuke.
Okay. All right.
I feel like that summarizes the movie, Christian.
Yeah,
what about you?
Sure. Yeah. Okay. I can see it.
You really don't even need to watch the movie now. You got that covered. But just in case you want a little bit more, here is the limerick for Octopussy. There's a mystery island in Delhi. You can get there by croc or by heli. If you're in the mood, you can swim in the nude, but you might get a saw in the belly.
Wow. Very nice.
Thank you. I think that's one of my better ones.
That's pretty good. Yeah.
And then here is the real plot summary from IMDb. A fake Fabergé egg recovered from the body of a fellow agent leads James Bond to uncover a jewel smuggling operation led by the mysterious Octopussy and a plot to blow up a NATO airbase.
All right. So we start off with the classic gun barrel.
No.
Roger Moore.
Incorrect.
No? What do we start off with?
At least the version that I watched, and maybe it's different, starts with United Artists Presents.
Sure.
Is that always there?
Depends, and I have to look at what era. So at a certain point, maybe it is. Which so United Artists had been partnered with Eon Productions to make the film since 1962, since the beginning of it. And at a certain point, Harold Saltzman and Cubby Broccoli were the two producers. Saltzman sold his shares, but they had a bit of a falling out, and he had money troubles. But instead of selling them to Saltzman, he sold them to United Artists, the production company. 1982 is apparently the first time this was used, so this is probably right around now. It may be one of the first ones where you had United Artists.
I see.
But they've been there since the beginning, and they got bought out by MGM, who got bought out by Amazon, so that's kind of, where it goes. All right, but after the United Arts logo, we start with the classic gun barrel.
Right. And then we're in Cuba with Fidel Castro at a racetrack.
Yeah, it's a horse exhibition at a military base. Bond is undercover as a horse owner, and one of my favorite things, a reversible jacket. His tweed jacket reverses into a military uniform. We have a female agent here, Bianca, who gives him an ID and a fake mustache. And he goes into an airplane hangar to get something, sets up a bomb, knocks out a guard, but then is captured and is taken to the back of a truck. And then Bianca drives up besides the guards. Okay, here's a question for you. If you're captured someone, why would you put them in the bed of a truck where they could easily get out?
Where would they go, though? You're in the middle of a hostile country. It didn't bother me that much.
That bothered me. I was like, really? Anyway, so Bianca drives up besides the truck, distracts the guards with a little leg.
My wife didn't like this part. She's going to have takes throughout the episode.
I'm sure.
She also liked the chickens.
So Bond pulls the parachutes of the guards, which, why do they have parachutes on?
That's an excellent question.
Which pulls them off of the truck and goes back into, gets into the car that Bianca's driving in, goes into the back of the horse trailer where there's a tiny plane and it flies into the hangar. Big explosions, lots of fun.
So very briefly about the plane, it shows a fake horse rear end.
Yep.
So I was afraid, because this is a Roger Moore movie.
Some sort of horse's ass joke.
No. I thought it was going to be some kind of fake horse plane. I don't even know what I thought was going to happen, but thought there was going to be something. And the movie wasn't that silly, at least not right away, but it becomes pretty silly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So really quickly, for those of you who haven't tuned in for our Moonraker, I've never really liked Roger Moore. Mm. Christian, I know, likes him.
I mean, he's not my favorite. He's maybe my fourth favorite, but I still enjoy him a lot. What I've found is I don't always enjoy the Roger Moore films, but I enjoy Roger Moore in them.
Okay, that's fair.
Yeah.
But yeah, so he has this plane. He flies it. He blows the bad guys. But then we get the first, actually not the first. We get a dumb joke where he runs out of fuel for some reason. Drives up to a gas station and says, fill her up. And I'm like, oh, it's downhill from here.
And then we go into our title sequence with one of the first Bond theme songs where the title is not the same as the title of the movie. Because they didn't think that they could make a music track called Octopussy track on the charts. So instead we have All Time High by Rita Coolidge.
So Christian, is there a book Octopussy?
Yes.
Okay, because clearly, why didn't they just change the name if it was going to be such an issue? Purists.
Because at this point, every James Bond movie, up until GoldenEye, took the title and some plot elements of one of the James Bond novels, short stories.
There you go. So I could change it now, dang it.
No. Yeah.
So other things about the opening, we get some naked dancing, or at least the woman's naked, the guy's in a suit. I like the part where a Roger Moore pops up.
Mm-hmm.
I found that very amusing.
This was very, it's like lots of lasers and day glow colors. I was expecting more octopus imagery. There was none.
Yeah, you'd think. Or maybe Indian imagery. That's what we were expecting.
Maybe that too, yeah. No, it takes place there. Very 80s.
Yeah.
So after this explosion of 80s-ness, we have the circus. And there's a clown running through the forest. There's a knife thrower chasing after him.
So I was like, oh my gosh, of course. People do talk about this movie, the infamous clown James Bond. But why does this guy look so scared? James Bond never looks scared.
Well, because it's not James Bond.
As it turns out, yeah. I thought the guy kind of looked like James Bond, not that you can really tell.
Nah. But yeah, so there's a fight. The clown is trying to escape, but instead gets hit by a knife thrown in the back and falls into the river.
Classic fig-out death, just what I would expect from James Bond.
Turns out he's not actually dead, though, and we see the British embassy in Berlin. The clown busts through the window of the embassy and collapses, and then dies, and he's holding a Fabergé egg.
Mm-hmm.
We go back to MI6 headquarters in London, where we, go out into the foyer outside of M's office, and we see not Miss Moneypenny, but Ms. Penelope Smallbone.
A character who is never going to come back, exactly. I think it's safe to say. It also looks like he's readying his hat to throw the hat mm-hmm. when he sees her. Mm-hmm. I like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so she is Moneypenny's assistant. Does Moneypenny need an assistant?
Apparently M's assistant needs an assistant. But that actually makes sense, I feel. Mm. And there's some really good dialogue here where she's like, oh yeah, Miss Moneypenny's told me all about you. James Bond. Mm-hmm.
And then he comes in with a full bouquet of roses and then gives one rose to Moneypenny and the rest to Penelope.
Yikes. I gotta say, Christian, and I said this for Moonraker 2, the new high-definition remaster of these Bond movies is not helping Roger Moore. He looks so old. I know this isn't even his last one.
Yeah, it's his second to the last. Yeah. But he's still so damn charming.
I mean, if you say so.
All right, so we have the briefing with him. The Minister of Defense and Jim Fanning, arc expert.
Yeah, and it looks like this movie is going to be a MacGuffin hunt. I despise MacGuffin hunts, especially when there's like a real egg and then a fake egg, and I don't care about the eggs. So.
Well, we'll see. Yeah, let's get into it. So, yeah, we have the egg which the clown had, and it turns out the clown was 009.
Mm-hmm.
And the egg is actually a fake, and the art expert, Jim Fanning, who states that a lot of Fabergé eggs have come up for auction by Russians recently, and it's a little suspicious. So Fanning is going to go to an auction where the real egg is going to be auctioned off, and Bond's going to come with him, and they're going to try to spot the seller.
Hmm.
And then we cut over to a Russian committee of generals.
And I got to say, Christian, this scene went on for a very long time, and it wasn't even really needed.
A funny thing about Bond films that, everyone thinks, oh, he's fighting the Russians, the KGB. Most times, there's never really a time where he's flat out going against the full-on KGB. It's either a rogue Russian general or someone broke off from, Russia to join Spectre. In the novels, sure, he's going up against Smersh and the KGB. But in the movies, because they want to sell this movie everywhere, he's never really going up against, the full might of Russia.
And he still doesn't, technically, as it turns out. Because later on we learn that it is a rogue Russian general. But I always like the Cold War as a backdrop for James Bond movies, not being part of it. And I also like in things like From Russia with Love, where it's like, they're going to give what was it called again? The machine?
The Lector.
Yeah, they're going to give the Lector to the enemy, and everyone knows who the enemy is. They don't need to say it, let alone show them on screen.
But so
the scene goes on for so long, by the way.
They're talking about the disarmament with NATO, and General Orlov, who is in charge of East Germany, disagrees. What I do like here is the turntable desks, so that rather than everyone just turning their head to the left so they can look at a screen, the entire desks are set up on a turntable so that they can.
I mean, yeah, it's right out of Blofeld. It's not a James Bond movie without a lair.
So basically, this is just a setup that General Orlov doesn't want disarmament and thinks that they instead should be expanding their borders.
Yeah, I completely forgot about this scene as the movie went on, but they do tie it back to it, which is pretty impressive. Yeah. So, and then they have something to do with the Fabergé eggs.
Well, so General Orlov goes to meet with the twin knife throwers, and we find out that he finds out that the fake was lost in transit, so now they need the genuine egg back.
And Christian, I feel like James Bond movies doesn't usually have locations just appearing.
Oh, like a title card?
On the film, like East Berlin, Kremlin Art Repository.
Depends. Some of them, usually they'll have like an establishing shot and maybe they'll have a title card or a location card. but not so often. I think the one that has the most of them, and they're very stylized and it's very cool, is Quantum of Solace. But yeah, not so much. But I think it also depends on how well known the locations are. If it's Paris, you don't really need to say it's Paris. You'll just have a shot of the Eiffel Tower. Same thing with London.
Same thing with Delhi. They just show the Taj Mahal.
Yeah. So we are at the auction, and Bond is there. He's talking with Jim Fanning, who says that the egg should fetch between 200 to 300,000 pounds. Any more than that would be outrageous. So the bidding starts, and it starts going up, and then Bond, of course, being Bond, and notices an attractive woman. And oh yeah, and we have a mention here that the title in the art auction is described as the property of a lady.
Yeah, that's right. And he says, of course it is.
Well, there's a lady right there.
So I think we all noticed, including my wife, though she pointed out, was that he replaces the egg. As soon as a character takes a prop off screen, you know something's up with that. Though I can't believe he did that in a room full of people all looking at him.
Yeah, so here's where also we meet our big villain of the piece, Kamal Khan, played by Louis Jourdan, who is French and not Indian at all.
That's right.
And Bond decides he's going to drive up the bidding and then request to see the egg. This is where he does the switcheroo with the fake and the real.
So I feel like Bond driving up the price of something at an auction happens in a different movie. Was it Casino Royale?
No.
Something, right? Am I right?
May have been a different movie we saw, not necessarily a Bond.
Okay, yeah, that's fair.
I'm trying to
think. Let's see how much he wants it, he says.
Are you sure that's not this movie?
No, I know that. In this movie, he says that, but in another movie, he messes with the bad guy to try to get a reaction out of him.
Interesting. And it's possible.
Mm.
But yeah, so, and he drives the price up to 1,000 pounds and sees that Kamal Khan, he had to buy it no matter what price it is. So Bond gets chewed out by M back at the office, and turns out that he switched the real egg for the fake egg. So even if he had been stuck with it, he would have not paid because he would have shown that it was a fake.
Yeah, exactly. There's also a part where he watches Kamal Khan leave, and he stands next to something called the Bond Street Kiosk. I don't know if you saw that. That was interesting.
I didn't catch that.
Yeah, but he says to M, "I got my flight to Delhi already."
Yep. So if Kamal Khan is legitimate, he will notice that it's a fake. But if not, then he'll complain. So
yeah, that's right.
That's how they know to be on to him. Well, or an additional way to know to be on to him, other than the fact that he was spending so much for this one egg.
Mm-hmm.
So we go to India, and we go to the establishing shot of the Taj Mahal.
That's right. Well, there's also a helicopter at this part, and my wife says people would have been going nuts if they had seen a helicopter, but nobody reacts.
Did you get to go to the Taj Mahal while you were there?
No, I only stayed in my wife's hometown of Hyderabad and just saw the town there.
Gotcha.
And there's not too much touristy stuff there except for a big high-tech center that didn't even exist when this movie was made.
So when he gets off this water taxi, he passes by a snake charmer who plays a very familiar tune of a da-da-da-da-da-da-da, which means the Bond theme exists in the world of James Bond.
Yeah, how do you feel about this, Christian? I feel like this is something that would have divided the fan base massively.
I think it's a cute, fun thing that I'm not bothered by.
That's good. Yeah, I can see it's like a weird meta inception.
Yeah.
And Bond even says, I like that tune.
It's a charming tune or something like that. So this snake charmer is Vijay, played by retired tennis player and sports commentator Vijay Armitage, who you may remember from Star Trek IV.
No, I didn't remember that, but I also looked it up. And I was going to tell you that later.
He's the captain who is the last captain we hear from who's stuck from the whale probe.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. Because I couldn't remember his last name, Armitage, that's right. But yeah, so he's works for Universal Exports, which, as we remember, is, Bond's cover organization.
Yeah, they name drop MI6. A lot of lore in this one. They say Universal Exports a lot.
Mm-hmm.
They even call him Commander Bond a lot, so they really know their source material. So they go for a ride in an auto taxi, also known as an auto, also known as a tuk-tuk, right?
Yeah.
My wife calls them autos, so that's what I got used to calling them.
Okay.
We use them all the time. They are very fun to ride in, also kind of scary.
I've never rode in an actual auto or tuk-tuk, but in the Philippines they have similar vehicles called trikes, which is It's like a motorcycle with it, with almost a sidecar attachment.
All right, that sounds like fun too.
Yeah, it's similar, but not exactly the same.
So this auto also appears at the Bond in Motion exhibit at the Spy Museum,
which at the time of recording, you have what, 2 days, or time of release, you have 3 days, 2 days to go, because it leaves in September 1st.
Oh yeah, you better hurry up if you want to see it.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. And we'll put up photos. I've taken some photos of it on our social media. Mm-hmm. But yes, he also meets the head of the section for India, Sedurin, for Universal Export / MI6. So Bond goes to check in. He's got a very nice suite.
There's an establishing shot of the hotel where there's all these women in bathing suits. Yeah. And I think, I would be happy to do the research, but I think this movie has the most number of women in bathing suits in all of James Bond.
You'll be happy to do that count and research, huh?
Yeah, that's right.
I would believe it.
Yeah.
I would say the only ones I can think of maybe that have, like, maybe Thunderball, because there's a lot of beach stuff, so people are just walking around in bikinis all the time.
So my wife made a comment here. She says, they all must be Americans.
I was going to say, yeah.
And I said, what about British? And she said, maybe, but they're definitely not Indians. Mm-hmm. Indians were not dressed like that.
So he goes into his room, he goes out to the balcony, and hears a commotion outside, and it's the woman from the auction who's boarding a boat, which has an octopus flag.
That's right.
And everyone on the boat, like all the deckhands and everything, are all women.
Mm-hmm.
We have a casino scene, a classic Bond casino scene, where Bond's wearing a white tux here, looks real nice.
That's right, and except they're playing the much less cool casino game of backgammon.
Yes, and he says it's all in the wrist.
Yeah, that's right. So I guess Kamal Khan's dice throw 12s every time.
If you watch, because I thought about this. So I've played back and I know the rules. I don't know how you bet on backgammon necessarily, but you actually catch him switching out the dice at a certain point.
Oh, okay.
So he puts his hand low. It's not, and then, yeah.
Yeah, so I guess he wasn't able to switch it before Bond.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So Bond shows the egg as his collateral. So he's like, takes the place of someone else who was, you know, said, you know, I was like, no, too rich for my blood. And Bond comes and says, I would have taken that doll. I was like, well, go ahead, take his place. And I love, he's like, I'm going to need to be lucky. So I'll take player's privilege and use your lucky dice. And I love he rolls, doesn't even look down at them, just looking straight at Kamal Khan. Double sixes.
Yeah, that was pretty good.
I think Roger Moore may be better than my Connery.
Yeah, it's certainly a lot easier to do. It's a pretty cool part. Like, I enjoyed
that.
Part.
He, like, also, like, shows the real egg as collateral.
That's right.
Yeah, oh, and I forgot to mention, so, this egg, I've seen a replica of it very recently. Future guest of our podcast, Dexter Ingram, has a replica of this egg in his collection.
Nice. Well, they say in the movie they only make, like, there's only five of them in existence or something like that.
Yeah.
So
no, which ones of the
of I don't know.
General, in general egg, Fabergé eggs in general? That's definitely not right.
Maybe this specific level. Yeah,
okay, but there are multiple replicas of this one. Dexter Ingram does have one. I got to see it. I've got some photos I'll share on social media later.
Hmm. We get introduced to the henchmen of this movie, because the Bond movie is always a henchman. A Sikh guy who can crush dice, so he's like Jaws, or he's like super strong.
Or the Odd Job.
Yeah, him too.
He does that with the golf ball, yeah. Hmm. So VGA arrives, he takes Bond in the tuk-tuk, we have a big chase and a fight.
Really quickly, though, I have to say this, I feel obligated. We get some racism here.
Oh, I was going to say, they are all the bad stereotypes here.
Well, it's actually worse than that. Like, don't get me wrong, on a level between one and Help, this movie isn't that bad.
Fair enough.
Yeah. But there is a line. He gives Vijay some money, and he says, that'll keep you
that'll
in
keep
curry.
You in curry. Yep.
My wife is pretty easygoing, but she was like, yeah, that's not cool.
No, it was not. No.
Then later, he does a wheelie with the auto. She was like, wow, they're pretty impressive.
But yeah, there's lots of sight gags here. I enjoy it. So I mentioned that Vijay's actor is a former tennis player. And so I like when he has a tennis racket in the car and he's using it to, you know, hit the goons. And the crowd outside, is you see them darting their eyes back and forth like they're watching a tennis match.
Yeah, it's very brief. It doesn't go on for too long, which I appreciate. Yeah. Yeah, there's some like good fighting. Bond gets stabbed.
Yeah,
oh, there's tension.
All the stereotypes of the, you know, the person lying on the bed of nails or
right. Okay, here we go again. So they go into the village thing, and my wife says, "Oh, look, there's hot coals. Someone gonna walk on the hot coals," which people do, both intentionally and unintentionally.
Okay, so I was wondering about that.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay, so she has a quick story. I'm gonna just steal my wife's story. So I apologize to the universe.
You are crediting her. It's not like taking this as your story.
That's correct. So she knew a guy, a Canadian guy, who was an Indiaphile. Okay, he was really into India stuff. And he was there. He traveled there for a long time. And he was at a religious festival, and he met a pregnant woman there who was going to walk on hot coals.
Uh-huh.
And the reason why she was going to do that was as, I think, penance for something she did wrong.
Sure.
And he said, "I don't want you to do it. I'll do it for you."
Oh, boy.
So she said, okay. And he did it. And he was, he like couldn't walk for like 2 weeks or something like that. That's how badly his feet got messed up.
Feel like there is a method that, is there something you're supposed to do that he didn't know? Or is it just you really just burning your feet as like penance?
This would have been great to look up for Spy Fact versus Fiction. I think it's probably a combination of both. Well, like, I think if you get used to it, like, for example, my wife's hands are stronger than mine. She can hold hot pans because she's used to it. So maybe there's something like that.
Okay. Yeah. Something to find out.
But it's definitely a thing that you walk on hot coals to atone for something is like, because there's the thing in Hinduism where if you sacrifice, food for 2 months, you get a boon. It's a whole thing. We don't really need to get into it right now.
Okay.
But with the bed of nails, she was like, "I don't know where this bed of nails thing is coming from."
Yeah, it's a stereotype, but I don't know if there's any truth to it or you know.
Yeah, I forgot to look it up for Spy Fact versus Fiction.
Too much other good stuff. Swallowers. I mean, I know they exist in general, but I don't know if that's an India-specific thing. Sword swallowers.
Yeah, I've only ever seen them at the Ren Fair.
Yeah. So, but I do enjoy, I think he's mainly here so we can get some James Bond sword fighting, which I did enjoy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he fights with swords occasionally.
Here, it was a Moonraker as well. I think Roger Moore probably has the most sword fighting for a Bond, like at least two occasions. Whereas I think, Brosnan had one, and then Connery had one with this, with the katana in You Only Live Twice.
Yeah, but the Brosnan one is an actual fight. Like, it goes on for longer than 5 seconds.
True, true. But I'm saying that he had the most occasions of it, Roger Moore.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. All right, but we get back in the tuk-tuk, and then they throw the money to cause a distraction.
That's right.
And we go to a mobile queue lab.
Well, hang on. They go through a poster. They crash through a poster and then drop poster. And that's how they get away. And the subtitles just says Indian language.
Oh, what is it?
But my wife translated not all of it, but some of it. And it's very brief. She just says, "Let's go." The guy says, "Let's go."
Interesting, interesting. But yeah, so we have a mobile queue lab where Q is on location yet again.
That's right. I like that he takes part in the movie. He has a trap door. Did you see what I did there? Yeah.
And there's also, the rope climbing trick.
Yeah, that's right. And Bond's got some one-liners going, but I won't repeat any of them in case we have favorite quotes later. But then we get some serious male gaze at this part where he's zooming in on a woman's cleavage.
Yep.
And my wife says at this point, "I don't have a good impression of him." I.e. James Bond.
This era was, I think, some of the most egregious for that sort of thing.
I think they assume that you've built up some goodwill towards James Bond before you just drop cold into this movie.
Yeah.
Maybe.
It would work better if he panned over to it, but the really rapid zooming in and out, is like, oh, that just seems stupid.
Also, the woman smiling and is fine with it. Product of a different time, certainly.
But yeah, but the biggest things he gets here are his homing device and bug, which they plant inside the real egg, and a pen which emits poison, which he, of course, makes a joke about a poison pen letter, which Casino Royale 67 beat them to the punch by 16 years.
That's right.
But yeah, and the other thing, the TV watch, which was actually a real watch.
Mm-hmm.
yeah. that actually you could watch TV on, except there's you had a little, to have yeah.
a little bit of product placement. He has a Seiko watch or whatever. Yeah,
Seiko.
Yeah. I think later he watches a Sony TV, whatever.
The inside of the pen is also the earpiece to listen to the bug.
Mm-hmm.
So Bond goes back to this hotel and he's told, oh, your hotel is ready. And he's like, I didn't have a hotel. I was like, oh, no, your guest is here waiting for you. And it is the woman from the auction whose name we find out is Magda.
Mm-hmm. And I got to say, Magda comes off as kind of terrifying in this part. Do you agree? Yeah, she's like very severe. Looks like she's about to come across the table and cut him at any minute. I don't know.
That was I didn't get that vibe. Interesting. But yeah, she says she's there on behalf of Kamal Khan. And to make a trade, the egg for his life.
Mm-hmm.
And then the hotel photographer comes by, takes a picture, and says, hope you don't mind. He's like, I collect memories. Like, oh, well, let's start making some. And then they sleep together very rapidly. What?
Well, I mean, come on, that's James Bond. You're really going to have an issue with it now.
Usually there's at least more of a lead-in. It's like, not just, all right, you want to make memories? Let's go. And then bang.
So they also say, what room number should I send the picture to? Do you think James Bond was stupid enough to actually give her his real number?
Yep, because he charged it to that room.
Okay, I guess it doesn't really make a difference at this point.
Maybe it's because it's Roger Moore and not, say, Connery, but I didn't even get that much of a connection between them, and then all of a sudden they're in bed.
Well, there you go. It's James Bond. I didn't have an issue with it.
No, and then you get a glimpse of her octopus tattoo, which matches the flag which was on that boat she came off of.
Mm-hmm.
And he asks about oh, that's my little octopussy.
Name drop.
Yeah. So Gobinda, the goon, is watching the window from below. He's not watching them, but he's like looking at the window. And Magda, you know, next morning is trying to slip out.
Well, she's wearing an Indian sari, and my wife had a reaction. She said, I can't believe she put it on herself. So saris, for those who are not aware, is basically one long piece of fabric. So you don't just put it on like you do a regular dress. You have to drape it. And if you don't know what you're doing, it's pretty much impossible.
Mm-hmm.
So she was skeptical that she learned to do it herself, Magda.
Yes, but it does serve a purpose. So when she gets to the balcony, she ties one end of it around and then uses it as like an aerial wrap to come down the balcony.
So this, I think, was my wife's favorite part, but she also says, saris are not that long. You can't use it to drop out of a second-story window.
Yeah, but this one's a special one.
I guess so, yeah.
That's funny. So Bond, in his watch, which I forgot to mention this feature, his watch is how he was able to watch the homing device and see where it goes. So he can see it on his watch that Magda has the egg.
Yeah, and she said, doesn't she steal it as well? Yeah. Yeah, which is funny because she escapes and then, what's the guy's name?
Gobinda.
What's the name? Gobinda. Robinda?
Gobinda.
Gobinda?
G-O-B-I-N-D.
Yeah. Gobinda just sneaks up into his bond and knocks him out right away. Right? So, like, why even bother? Yeah. It's funny.
So, Kamal Khan arrives at a floating palace where there's all women.
Mm-hmm.
And he goes to meet with Octopussy and presents her with the real egg.
And she knows James Bond.
Yep. And they're not showing her face. It's like very Blofeld-esque here.
Mm.
And Kamal Khan says they should kill Bond right now, but Octopussy wants him brought to her.
Mm.
So Bond is locked up in the Monsoon Palace where Kamal Khan is headquartered. And Gobinda brings Bond to dinner with Kamal and Magda. And Bond is wondering why he's there since they have the egg.
Yeah, they say, we need answers. You're going to give us our answers about all this jewelry stuff. I didn't really care that much.
So back in his cell, Bond uses the poison pen to get the bars on the window loose. He sneaks out onto the ledge.
But my wife says, hey, stop destroying that palace.
And then he goes past Magda's room, and there's a helicopter incoming where we see General Arlov arriving, who meets with Kamal. And Bond sneaks into Magda's room and goes into the hallway to find out what Orlov is doing. And as he sneaks out the door, Magda sees him and smiles.
Yeah, that's nice. Classic James Bond getting her to switch sides. There's a snoring guard at one point.
Uh-huh.
And my wife said, hey, do you think they're being racist and saying Indians are lazy? And I said, no. I think it's just a snoring guard is just a trope that's in a lot of Bond movies.
Yeah, yeah.
What's funny, though, it's probably not even that late at night. Like, Magda's still awake. It's probably, like, 8:30.
So there's a lot of counterfeit jewelry that they're making, which is all supposed to match some up with something in the archives. So that's how... It's a money-making scheme, basically. So you sell off all the jewels that are in the archive and replace them with fakes so that the Russians have no idea.
Yeah, that's right. And at some point, Magda starts using a hairdryer, which messes with the bug for no explained reason. That really didn't make a lot of sense.
It's a very delicate, thing, I assume.
Sure. Spy gadget.
Kamo will get the originalist part of the deal, and then they'll meet in Karl Markstad in 1 week. And then Orlov smashes what he thinks is a fake, but is actually genuine, I believe, if I'm tracking all the switcheroos.
Yeah, I thought it was real too, but then the bug is exposed, right? Do they notice it?
That's the real one, because that's the one that had the bug. And then Kamal sees the bug and sends Gabin to get Bond, but Bond is hiding in the meat store to get snuck out by people who are disposing of some old meat.
Yeah, and I think the idea is they didn't think it was human dead bodies. They just thought it was like pig bodies or something. Okay, we were wondering about that. So then we get this very, very long hunting James Bond sequence.
The most dangerous game.
Yeah, I didn't find it to be especially exciting.
No, it's fine. It's a chase to the jungle. They're hunting Bond on backs of elephants. There's a tiger where he tells the tiger to sit and it miraculously listens.
My wife thought that was very stupid.
Yeah. He gets cornered and there's a snake on top of him. And
That's right. He
loosens the strap of one of the elephant saddles and then suddenly gets tall enough up a tree to do a Tarzan yell and swing on vines.
There's a part where somebody says something in Hindi. My wife says it says, follow him. So then apparently this murder jungle that contains every animal in India and is really small is also right next to a tour boat route. There's a tour boat right there.
And that's how he gets out. Yeah. He boards a tourist boat and escapes. Bond meets back up with Vijay and Sadurin and describes Magda's tattoo, and they sketch it out and they recognize it as a symbol for a woman who lives on that island, Octopussy. No one knows her real name, but she lives in the floating palace, and everyone there is, a woman.
That's right. And I guess it's like Amazon Island, where if a man arrives, they're going to kill him, unless it's Kamal Khan and his friends.
Yeah.
Presumably.
Any uninvited man, let's say.
Yeah, there you go.
So Bond sneaks in to the island.
And how does he do that, Christian?
On a crocodile submersible.
And how do you feel about the crocodile submersible?
I'm fine with it.
It's a little silly. Maybe more than a little silly. When the mouth opens and it's Bond's like face.
I thought it was funny. I enjoyed it. It's a Roger Moore film. Come on.
Is there a Sean Connery where he has a duck on his head?
Yes, that's Goldfinger.
If Goldfinger can get away with it.
Right? Yeah. Anyway, so Octopussy sees him sneaking in on her CCTV and she's expecting him. He wants to know about Julie smuggling and the dead agent, 009. And she says, I don't know about the dead agent, but yes, I am a smuggler, and I own that. I know the story of, Major Dexter Smythe, who stole gold. He was a former British Army, but was seconded to the SAS, and then he found the gold, but then killed the guide.
This is like this weird exposition conversation.
Yep. And I'll explain why it's there later.
Well, I mean, we learned that short version is James Bond killed Octopussy's father.
Didn't kill him.
Oh, sorry, arrested him.
Was sent to arrest him, but instead gave him 24 hours to settle his affairs, in which time he committed suicide.
Okay. Now, one would think that Octopussy would hold Bond responsible for her father's death, but nope, she's actually cool with that.
She said, no, you gave him, the out to, end his life on his own terms. So she was grateful for that.
Yeah, so I didn't understand. I know you're going to explain it later, but why have this whole conversation? If it doesn't provide our villainess with her motive, or really much of it.
It's something that I'll explain later.
Okay, fine.
Yeah. Anyway, so I enjoy the scene here where Kamal arrives and tells Octopussy that Bond escaped, and a Bond appears from around the corner and said, well, I'm here.
That's right. Yeah, the reunion with Kamo-Khan, you might say.
Yeah. So Kamo-Khan leaves, and then Bond, or Octopussy, states, the smuggling is no concern of MI6, and I've broken no British laws. And he says, you're free to leave, but I would like you to stay as my guest for a few days, and then tells Magda to double the guard on Bond's room. But give him every courtesy.
Yeah, let's just hang out for a while.
Yeah. Then Kamal Khan goes to hire some local thugs to attack the island and kill Bond.
Yeah, so this is kind of interesting. This is kind of cool. Yeah.
But then he states that Octopussy must not be harmed.
Yeah, so we also learn a bit about Octopussy, that she has this all-women gang of criminals. Yeah. And she gives them a purpose and a life, and they all dress in sexy outfits. And it occurred to me at this point, Christian, do you think she was supposed to be just Pussy Galore? Like, brought back? Because they're almost the same character.
Well, she's not a pilot.
Oh, okay, sorry. Big difference.
There's a smuggler. Like, that's a difference.
Well, I mean, yeah, they're criminals who lead all gangs of women, and they have pussy in the name. And they're into James Bond. And they're in James Bond's world, right?
Yeah.
It almost made me wonder if they wanted to do a sequel all about her, but they couldn't get the rights.
No, if they wanted to, they could have. Other than Casino Royale, they had the rights to everything. So they could have.
Okay.
They didn't want to. But funnily enough, Maude Adams, who plays Octopussy, has been in a Bond film before. She was one of the secondary Bond girls for The Man with the Golden Gun, another Roger Moore film. And supposedly she has like a background cameo in A View to a Kill, some like in a crowd scene.
All right.
We also see the Razor Yo-Yo.
Yeah.
Bond is searching Octopussy's room and finds a flyer for the circus, which is going to be in Karl Marx-Stadt. So now he's suspicious.
Oh, yeah, that's right. That's right. That's their next destination.
We find that Octopussy will be leaving for a week, and she wants Bond to be there for when she returns, and wants, you know, Bond to partner with her. They could do so they're two of a kind, which is a line from the theme song. And there's a forceful kiss, and then they sleep together.
Yep, that's right.
But yeah, so VJ is watching the island, and then he gets attacked and killed by the Razor Yo-Yo. And then this is where we get a henchman fight. They're trying to kill Bond. There's a big fight. I notice here that, you know, Octopussy doesn't really know how to fight. She falls into the classic trope of, you know, women only fight with, you know, wine bottles or frying pans or that sort of thing.
Yeah, like sneak up on people.
Yeah. But she does end up using a trank gun on one of the goons. Like, why not a real gun?
Maybe she's a pacifist.
But then Bond falls out the window with one of the assassins, and then returns to shore in the croc sub.
Somehow. Yeah. After dodging some crocs. Yeah, there's some pretty good fighting in this part.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then so Q is there on the shore and said that he found VJ's, and that he was alive when he found them. So that's kind of dark.
Yeah. Presumably we missed that. Yeah. He tells them everything they need to know, which is they're leaving India, so sad, and they're going to Germany, which I did not like. I mean, like, come on, he's been to Germany a million times.
Has he?
Whatever. I've been to Germany in movies a million times.
Fair enough. So M tells Bond to find out why he's, you know, why Kamal Khan's involved with jewelry smuggling. M gives him cover documentary to go into East Berlin, and then M gets out before crossing over Checkpoint Charlie.
Yay, it's back.
So Bond arrives at the Karl Marx-Stadt Circus. We see the knife throwers from the beginning. Lots of East German soldiers in the crowd, and Kamal Khan is in the front row with Octopussy and General Orlov. We see Magda in there dressed up like a ringleader.
Yeah, I like Bond just sits around a bunch of Soviet soldiers and nobody even cares.
German soldiers, not Soviet soldiers. Big difference.
If you say so. Anyway, there's a part where he dodges Magda by hiding behind a large man.
Yep.
My wife says, what are the chances that that guy is there right when he needed him?
I want to look back at when they go to where they're at, you know, in East Berlin. Did you see any Trabants? I saw no Trabants. I was looking for Trabants.
I was not looking for Trabants, so I didn't see them.
This is probably the closest we'll get to having a Trabant in a Bond film. So, like, I don't see any. Let me keep looking. So grabs one of the crew jackets and picks up a crate and blends in.
Mm-hmm.
And now General Gogol is inspecting the archives and finds out that it's full of fakes. And he knows that they fall under Orlov's jurisdiction. So now he's going to find out where Orlov is.
Yeah, he knows that Orlov's up on this. At this point, my wife made an observation that Roger Moore looks like Rich Fairbanks, the CEO of Capital One. if you know who that is.
I do not, but now
by the
I
way,
have to
he's like in his 80s. So, yeah.
All right, so Bond is under the train as they're talking and listening in on them, and we find out that they're switching one of the particular train cars, and there's a nuclear bomb on the train that they switch to, which has a 4-hour delay.
Yeah, this really comes out of nowhere, Christian, I gotta say. Like, they talked about that whole plan to invade West Germany for some reason, and but that was so long ago, I completely forgot about it. Yeah.
One of the knife throwers is inspecting the jewels, and Bond knocks him out, steals his clothes. Or does he kill him? We're not actually sure. We just see...
I feel like he does kill him, because his brother says later, that was for my brother.
But did he even know that his brother was dead? He didn't know his brother was dead until he saw Bond in his clothes, which we'll get to.
There's also a nice detail when they're changing the cars. You can see on the side of one of the cars, next destination U.S. Air Force Base.
Yep.
Before they give it a prominent shot. So if you got a sharp eye, you can see it. Yeah.
Orlov comes in to take the jewels out and is like, goes to get the knife throwers. And then Bond reveals himself and wants to know what Orlov's plan is. They talked earlier about how the yield from this nuke looks identical to an American nuke. And it'll look like an American nuke went off in the Air Force Base. They look for the launches from sea or from land, and there'll be no launches so that they can verify it. It'll just look like it was an accident that happened on an American air base in Europe, and because of that Europe would insist on total disarmament.
I mean, and, I don't know about that part, but the beginning made sense.
Yeah. So when Europe's entirely disarmed, they'll allow the Soviets to march in undeterred.
That's right.
The world domination.
Yeah.
He's interrogating Orlov. They're both surprised by German troops. Or Bond. This has got to be a straight up headshot you see in a Bond film.
Yeah, he just starts murdering these Germans. They're not necessarily even really bad guys per se.
No, they're just happenstance of, yeah. So I was like, oh, wow. This is why he has a license to kill.
So, Christian, I read somewhere that Roger Moore in real life was a pacifist who loathed violence. Is that true? Have you ever heard that before?
Okay, not necessarily a pacifist. He didn't like guns. He realized that he couldn't play it heavy like Sean Connery, so his action scenes were maybe not as convincing. So he tried to play to his strengths more than Connery necessarily.
Oh, okay.
He kept a diary during the making of Live and Let Die. I read the diary Roger Moore kept during the making of Live and Let Die, and he talked about he was studying martial arts. So.
Okay, there you go.
Yeah, so he's not necessarily a pacifist, but he was not as comfortable with the violent part of Bond as, say, Connery seemed to be.
So they put some of the fake jewelry in one of the cars that shows up later, and then we get the great scene where Bond is being chased, and then his car blows a tire, and he loses his tires, and he gets on the train tracks.
Yep. So he uses the rims of the tires that got blown out to get onto the drive onto the tire tracks.
This is my wife's whole favorite part. She loved the idea of driving on a train track. You can go super fast. No traffic. Just keep right on going. And then when the other train comes, she was like, hurry up, James Bond. So that was very effective.
Yeah. And he sneaks into the compartment where the other knife thrower is there. We cut back to General Gogo, who finds the car that Bond was in, which crashed with the jewels in the trunk.
Yeah, there's a good transition where he smashes it and then the scene cuts to something else. I like that.
Train car is being inspected as they cross the border from East Germany into West Germany, and you see Bond hiding in a gorilla suit.
That's right.
And we see Orlov is running for the train with Gogol chasing him, and he crosses the border as a train is driving away and is shot down.
Yeah, so why did you think he made a break for the train?
Because he saw Gogol coming and knew that Gogol was on to him. If I get on the train, I can get into East Berlin or West Berlin, and I'm home. Well, not exactly home, but he's
away from the immediate threat. So then I was wondering, okay, so the bomb is traveling with the circus. So are they going to just kill the whole circus?
Yep.
And Octopus is okay with that? Then I was like, oh wait, maybe she doesn't know about it.
No, yep.
Getting double crossed.
So Kamal and his goons go to set the bomb. Bond knocks over something, which gets their attention, but he manages to escape onto the roof be a lot of running on rooftops, and
he
clings to the side of the train,
jumps
and as he's doing
pipes.
So, sees Octopussy getting a massage.
Perfect time to get a massage in the middle of your criminal operation.
And then, Kamo spots him before Octopussy does and shoots at him. And so he has to run back on the train rooftop where he gets caught by Gobinda.
Mm.
And we get back on top of the train. The knife thrower gets up there and they fall together off the train. We have a knife fight.
Yeah, this is where he says, this is for my brother. I don't remember when Bond killed his brother, but I guess he did.
Mm-hmm. Well, he did when he stole his clothes.
No, that's the implication. But they're off the train. He has to get back to the train. There's a part where it shows him trying to hitchhike. Okay, Christian, do you remember in our coverage of 007 Road to a Million? There was a part where I said James Bond would never just go around randomly asking people for directions.
Well,
that's pretty darn close to what he does here. Pretty darn close.
So he catches a ride with a German couple in their Beetle.
Very German stereotypes, by the way.
Yeah.
They like bratwurst and like beer and like a keg. They're kind of overweight.
Yeah. So he's trying to alert someone by using the phone booth, but someone's using the phone booth. So instead, he steals their car, and then the police chase after Bond.
That's great. There's also a part briefly in the circus where they have a cute little tiger cub.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess Octopussy is like the Tiger King, like Joe Exotic.
So Kamal and Gobinder leave the circus to get out of the range of the Bond, and as they're driving, they pass Bond, like in the stolen car with the cops chasing after him.
Mm-hmm.
And Bond drives into the base, goes through the barricade. Everyone's just, chasing after him. He has to disguise himself as a clown. So this is why we get the clown.
So I thought we escaped the clown Bond. I thought maybe all the fans just remembered it wrong and it's actually 009. But no. There's also a bit of a Blues Brothers part where he's chased by the cops and then the army and then everybody else.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay, so we get this whole thing where he goes into the circus and like he tries to talk to the generals and the generals don't believe him. And I had a theory about this part, Christian. I thought they were going for like a horror vibe.
Maybe.
I thought that might have been the intention, but it didn't work.
No.
Because everyone's about to die. Circuses are already kind of scary. Like clowns are already kind of scary.
Mm-hmm.
But in order for that to work, I think Bond needed not to be dressed up like a clown. I think he needed to look normal, have everybody else be freaky, nobody's listening to him, everyone's just laughing, and it's like, I also needed some like scary Jaws or Psycho kind of music, like rah. I thought that could have been pretty effective.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Causes this big commotion and tries to get the case of holding the Bond open with an axe, and all this time, Octopussy sees him and is like, and realizes that, and actually Magni even states it out loud, that if he's right, he's gonna blow our entire operation, all of the jewelry smuggling and everything, but
as opposed to just getting blown up normally.
If he's wrong, then he's trying to open the case with an axe, but then Octopussy just shoots it open. So hey, she can use the real guns, not just tranks. I don't know why they had that using a trank earlier.
I guess she's not a pacifist either.
Yeah, and so they showed it and then expose the bomb. Well, there's seconds left, and Bond is able to disarm it.
Yeah, not 007 this time.
Yeah. And then Octopussy asked Magda where Kamal Khan went, and he said he was going back to India.
Okay, so that's nice.
Yeah.
They're not done.
So Kamal Khan is packing up his monsoon palace. He has, some U.S. treasury mint, or some kind of treasury mint, maybe not the U.S., like, the plates to make, counterfeit money. And other things. And as this is going on, Octopussy and her, all her girls are infiltrating. And there's a gag, which this is the fourth time this particular gag has appeared, but the other three times is all the same actor. This is not the same actor of the man with a wine bottle who does a double take.
Oh, I missed that.
Yeah. It's when all the girls are forming a human ladder, basically. And they're up on the top of the wall, and then the guy who's drinking looks over and sees the girl at his height, just on top of all the other girls, and does a double take with the bottle.
Okay.
Yeah.
I realize we haven't seen Bond in a while in this part. It's a large gap without him.
But yes, Orlov, it's Kamal Khan, tries to pin it all on Orlov. We have a big fight, Kamal Khan's men versus Octopussy's women, and then this is where Bond appears, via hot air balloon with Q.
Well, what'd you think?
What?
Didn't like it.
The hot air balloon?
The Union Jack hot air balloon.
Well, yeah. Well, actually, I didn't notice it was a Union Jack until later on because it was darkly lit. It was harder to tell.
A million ways you could have gotten
it. I enjoyed it. I mean, I think it's fun.
All right.
So now, seemingly, Octopussy knows how to fight. At least with a sword, she's able to like, hold her own for a bit.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. And then Bond swings into the room. Slides down a banister, has to shoot off, you know, the little thing at the end of the banister so his balls don't get hit on it.
Yeah, I did kind of like that part until he shoots the egg. Yeah.
Yeah. Then Octopussy is captured and is tied up and taken on a horse. Mm-hmm. Q saves a bunch of girls with the hot air balloon.
So, Christian, this part turns into a Mission Impossible movie. You get the horse.
Final Reckoning.
Chasing on the horse.
Yeah.
Climbing on the plane. They did it first, right?
Yep. Yeah, the horses arrive in a small plane. They take off. Bond jumps from onto the horse onto the tail of the plane. Khan tries to shake him off, but Bond manages to take out one of their engines. Kamal Khan sends Gobinda out to get him, and then Bond knocks Gobinda off with like the antenna of the plane.
Yeah, it wasn't even really clear what happened. It's just they're kind of struggling around and he falls
back,
off.
Holds the antenna that's on top of the plane back, like pulls it back, and then hits Gobinda in the face, who holds his face and then falls off. And then Kamal Khan managed to land roughly as Bond gets inside the plane and pulls Octopussy out, and they both jump off the plane before the plane turns out that where Kamal Khan landed was not a good landing place because it, you know, kept going off onto a cliff.
Yeah, so then he crashes. There's a very awkward cut where it shows the plane going down and then shows it like in the middle of exploding. It's a little weird. Yeah.
And then we cut back to London where General Gogol says that, you know, the USSR categorically denies that the events ever occurred, but incidentally requests that Bond returns the Romanov Star, which is one of their most valuable items.
Yeah, he picks that up.
I don't remember Bond taking it.
Yeah, I don't know.
General Gogol asks, where is Bond anyways? And M says, due to the extent of his injuries, he's actually not fit enough to travel yet. And so we see him on, you know, one of Octopussy's boats in traction while he's kissing Octopussy, and who's like, it's such a shame you're so injured right now. And then he said, I'm not too injured for sex, so let me break out of being in traction and, you know...
Yeah, I feel like James Bond never gets injured. At least not severely enough to go to the hospital.
Casino Royale.
So I was surprised. Okay, that's one. Yeah.
But then it ends with a classic, oh, James.
Yeah, I feel like she says that earlier, too. Not just at the end.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. And the movie is over.
Yep.
Spy fact versus spy fiction.
Let's get going here. So next is our spy fact versus fiction. I kind of have a lot though, so why don't you go first?
Well, so you asked about the novel Octopussy, and basically it's actually a short story which is collected into it's the 14th and final James Bond book by Ian Fleming called Octopussy and the Living Daylights, and so it has a bunch of short stories, including Octopussy, The Living Daylights, Property of a Lady, and 007 in New York. So the actual short story of Octopussy is the whole story that she tells about Major Dexter Smythe.
Oh, I see.
So that's the only reason it's there. Now, the other the interesting thing about it is, so they place it in Asia when this all happens in the movie. In the short story, it happens in Austria, in Kitzbühel. Okay. And also, the guide who mentions that Dexter Smythe kills is actually Oberhauser, and Bond has a personal connection to Oberhauser, who apparently was Bond's ski instructor and was something of a father to him at a time he needed one. Now, this ties it into the movie Spectre, where we had the villain Franz Oberhauser, who was, you know, played by Christoph Waltz, who is, instead of just being sort of somewhat of a father figure, Oberhauser was now his actual foster father. So they pulled that detail out of there. So that's why there's that. Now, the other short story that this one heavily pulls from is Property of a Lady, which you remember was mentioned. And so that whole scene about, you know, the Fabergé eggs and the auction part, it's basically that part of the film is that whole short story.
Okay. That's the whole content of the short story, is he goes to an auction.
Yeah, yeah, and he's trying to track down who's selling and all that sort of stuff. So that's what I've got for the novels. Now, the airplane that was used in the very beginning is called a BDJ Acrostar microjet, and it appears, yeah, in the pre-title sequence. Is also, you can also see it in the background in Die Another Day. And it was invented by engineer Jim Beatty, and it has took the Guinness World Record for the lightest aircraft jet, and can hit speeds of 320 miles per hour.
Yes.
Now I did a little research, and the BD-5J uses a kerosene-based fuel, specifically a type of jet fuel, to power the engines, which would not be at your average gas station. So they could not have filled it up.
Makes sense.
Now, so the, like I said, the version they use in the film is a BD-5J. Now, in the Air and Space Museum out at Dulles, near us, they don't have this model, but they have a BD-5B, which looks pretty identical. So if you want to see something similar to it, you can find it at the Aerospace Museum in Virginia, the Udvar-Hazy Center.
Okay.
So Fabergé eggs, or a jeweled egg first created by the jewelry firm of House of Fabergé in St. Petersburg, Russia. As many as 69 Tsarist Russian eggs were created, of which 61 are known to have survived. Let's see. Now, the one that's specifically in the film is modeled after the Imperial Coronation Egg, which was made under the supervision of Russian jeweler Peter Carl Fabergé in 1897. And it does feature the little carriage inside of it. Let's see. I also have the Lake Palace, which was where Octopussy's, you know, headquarters was set. Was formerly known as Jagniwas Palace, is the former summer palace of the royal dynasty of Mewar, and is now operated as a hotel. And it is set in, is actually in India.
Yeah, but it's in Udaipur, Rajasthan.
Yeah.
So when I was making the poem, and I said there's a mystery island in Delhi, my wife said it's not in Delhi, it's in Rajasthan. And I said, I know, but in the movie, it's in Delhi. World of the movie.
So one of my in-laws were actually doing a whole trip throughout Asia, and then I get a text message from my father-in-law saying, hey, the hotel I'm staying at was apparently featured in a James Bond movie, and he sends me pictures like, that's the thing from Octopussy. Yeah, so they got to stay. They said it was pretty cool. Apparently there was a wedding that was taking place there, so it was all like decorated. Lastly, Checkpoint Charlie, and this is all from Wikipedia, was the Western Bloc's name for the best-known Berlin Wall crossing point between East and West Berlin during the Cold War. Became a symbol of the Cold War, representing the separation of East and West. After the dissolution of the Eastern Bloc and the unification of Germany, the guardhouse at Checkpoint Charlie became a tourist attraction. It is now located in the Allied Museum in the Dahlem neighborhood of Berlin. All right, and that's what I've got for Spy Fact versus Spy Fiction.
Okay, very nice. So I have a lot of India stuff for mine. So you mentioned the Lake Palace, but the movie was also shot at Jog Mandir and the Monsoon Palace, which is... There's like a hilltop palace.
Yeah, the Monsoon Palace. Yeah, that's where Kamal Khan was based.
And what's interesting is these things aren't ancient, at least certainly by Indian standards. The Lake Palace was rebuilt, or it was built in 1362, and the Monsoon Palace was built in 1884. So it's not exactly old.
Okay, interesting.
Okay, that was according to Wikipedia. Okay, so for the spiders, my wife says no spiders of that size exist in India. They're enormous tarantulas.
Right.
So she says we just have small spiders. For Indian hotels, like he stays in a hotel, right? My wife says don't ever stay in a hotel that's not 5 stars in India.
Interesting.
Because they're not clean. Sometimes they'll film you or listen to you, or like they don't have good service or something like that. So it's either 5 stars or bust if you ever go there. The stop sign is true. Stop signs are the same in Germany and the US. We were wondering about that. And then finally, what you call the saw yo-yo is probably based on the saw weapon, like a spinning saw blade that can be thrown, associated with the Hindu deity Vishnu, the Sudarshana Chakra, a divine spinning discus with sharp edges.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I did not think of that. That's interesting that they may have at least potentially based it on something real.
Yeah, that's right.
In Indian history.
Yeah.
If I recall, that was one of the one of the back when they had the was Exquisitely Evil exhibit at the old Spy Museum. I think they featured those. If I can find some photos of that, I'll share them.
Oh, that'd be cool. So yeah, really just quickly about the chakra. It's a powerful symbol of divine protection, cosmic order, and the righteous destruction of evil. That's unfortunate. And it represents the wheel of time and the divine will that restores balance by cutting through ignorance. This is all according to Wikipedia. If you look up pictures of Vishnu, he has a hand and then the disc is like horizontal. So you can actually see it. It doesn't look like a flat one. Okay, that's what I got for Spy Fact versus Fiction. Next, we have our favorite quotes.
Favorite quotes.
I'm sure a lot of our one-liners are going to be featured here.
Yeah, I've got a couple, so let me go first.
Okay, sure.
I have from the Tuck Tuck Chase, we have company. No problem, this is a company car.
And I don't remember that one.
Yeah. And then I also had, I think it's from earlier from, or not from, from Bond, he said, I'd heard the price of eggs was going up, but isn't that a little high?
Yeah, this is kind of relevant in this day and age, huh? Right. The meme.
And lastly, I think this is my favorite line from this movie, when he's escaping the most dangerous game hunt, and he gets onto the tourist boat, and the tourist says, are you with our group? No, ma'am, I'm with the economy tour.
Yeah, that was pretty funny. Okay, so I actually have a lot of favorite quotes, if you don't mind. Some of them I like because they're so bad. Like when he says, my name's Toro, sounds like a loaded bull. Maybe you want to facepalm. I like he's talking to Vijay, and he says, I got a job as a pro in his tennis club. And he says, well, have you learned anything? And he says, my backhand's improved. I thought that was a legitimately funny line. He says a little bit later here, you can play with your asp. Right. And then he shows a butt.
Yep.
Right. They also have that.
Mm-hmm.
There's a part where Magda says, you have a good memory for faces. And he says, and figures.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like a triple pun. We get stabbed in the money. He says, thank God for hard currency. I want to go on for too long. Okay, so I want to do two more. The second last one is, he saves everyone's life and prevents nuclear war. And a random guy says to him, thank you very much. You did a great job. Which is the most absurd thing to say to somebody who just literally saved everyone's life. It's like, they couldn't have written that. But finally, this is my last favorite line. Sorry. Is, he says to Q, I also lost my PPK. And Q is like, anything else? He's like so mad for no reason.
Because he has to keep giving him things because he keeps losing them.
All right, moving on.
Ratings.
So now it is time for our ratings on a scale of 1 to 10 martinis, 1 being Avengers 1997 level bad, and 10 being even better than Mission Impossible Ghost Protocol. How would we rate Octopussy? I'm going to say it one more time.
All right, well, let's hear it. I'm curious.
Yeah, I didn't think it was very good.
Okay.
Unfortunately, I've never really been a fan of Roger Moore. The India stuff was cool, but the bad guys suck. Really,
I don't know. I enjoy Louis Jourdan, but good. Yeah,
they just don't have a lot of panache. The henchman guy is kind of cool, I suppose. He's just like a kind of discount odd job. Yeah, I'd like the India stuff. Like I said, the nuclear bomb comes out of nowhere. I'd like the fights on the trains, but it's all backloaded at the end.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's just pretty below average. So I'm gonna give it a 4 out of 10 martinis.
All right. I'm gonna. Understandably, not unpredictably, give it a higher than you, but not it's on the lower end of the Bond movies for me. I think I'm gonna give it a 5.5 martinis out of 10. It's definitely not my favorite. It is still enjoyable though for me. Just watch it, and especially as I found this for the Bond films, I don't watch a lot. You know, I tend to forget some of that stuff. So I'm like, oh yeah, I forgot this happened. So it's like a new experience for me watching it again. So, I mean, like I said before, I don't always enjoy Roger Moore movies, but I enjoy Roger Moore in them. And I think he's probably the best part of the movie.
Yeah, that's fair.
It is interesting though that this came out, what, 83?
Yes, that's right.
Let's see. So this came out after Temple of Doom came out, right?
I think they're very close to each other.
Wait, actually, 82, 81 was Raiders? Is that right? Or is it still 7?
I don't know.
'84. Okay, so it came out before Raiders did, but you know, doesn't do any better in terms of Indian portrayal than Raiders. Before Temple of Doom did, but isn't any better than a portrayal than.
I think it's a little bit better.
Actually, no, it is a bit better, but I guess you know, yeah, it's actually. Let me think about that now. Now, before I flat out say that, I'd say most of the Indians are portrayed positively, unlike in. Temple of Doom.
I mean, yeah, it's just a setting. Like,
it's
not even really about them per se. So,
yeah, but yeah, so still, yeah, 5.5 out of 10 is what I would say.
Okay, well, thank you all for joining us. You can find us on social media, the SpyFi Guys on Facebook, Blue Sky, and Instagram, and our merch store as well at redbubble.com. Until next time, I'm Zach.
And I'm Christian.
And we are the SpyFi Guys signing off.
All right.
Thank you for listening to the SpyFi Guys. If you enjoyed our podcast, please be sure to give us a 5-star rating on iTunes. The theme song from this podcast is Mistake the Getaway by Kevin MacLeod from Incompetech.com. Licensed under Creative Commons by Attribution 3.0. Films, books, and television shows reviewed by our podcast are the intellectual property of their respective copyright holders, and no infringement is intended.
This is a personal podcast. Any views, statements, or opinions expressed in this podcast are personal and belong solely to the participants. They do not represent those of people, institutions, or organizations that the participants may or may not be associated with in a professional or personal capacity unless explicitly stated. Any views or opinions are not intended to malign any religion, ethnic group, club, organization, company, or individual.
You can find our podcast on social media at The SpyFi Guys on Facebook, Blue Sky, YouTube, and Instagram.